Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker. Today we're going to talk about an awesome episode revolving around trans rights in bathrooms. We'll start off with a little bit of info first.
You haven't actually read it, so you have no idea what the episode's about.
I have no idea what's going on here. All right, Brown versus the Board of Education. Let me start over.
No, that's fine.
All right. Which, if Sarah Palin is listening, is a Supreme Court case, which is an off comment. What did Sarah Palin do?
She couldn't name a Supreme Court case, remember? Her literal, only objective was, I'm going to go on the news and be a big girl, and I can't name a newspaper before.
She was super cool.
I was writing jokes in the intro here.
Yeah, you're fucking slamming, dude. remember when her town was like the most meth per capita town in all of Alaska?
That's maybe it cool. Still is. I've let my meth statistics atrophy.
You know, sometimes you gotta chase a dragon. What are you gonna do? All right. So with Brown versus the Board of Education, the Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal was unconstitutional. This occurred in 1954. The civil rights movement of the 1960s was at least partially about eliminating separate but equal. That's true.
So I didn't know if like at least partially was appropriate phrasing, or if it was like I could make out a stronger statement. So I kind of just hedged and was like, eh.
You know, that's a good bet, because you know at that point in time it's the fact that class was separated on color and not an actual class. Made it so that everything was about color. And so, I mean, yeah, eliminating separate or equal was from all things, not just education. So that's good enough. BLM or Black Lives Matter today, the movement can be framed as eliminating a derivative, separate but equal. The same but unequal, that's true. Where the ultimate pursuit is equal access for all under the law. That's a good statement. And it's not just that, it's also equal pay, equal opportunity. Yeah, there's a lot here about separate but equal. And remember, the corporations don't give a shit, so they're going to play it to the legal letter of the law every single time to exploit as much work as possible. All right, so this is largely manifested in police violence against blacks. One police force of, by, and for the ruling class is treating one race differently than the other, but it doesn't stop at policing. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's like basically saying, like, yeah, it's pretty good, man.
That's like the high point of my writing here. So we'll see. It gets...
Well, you dunked on Sarah Palin, which is really important. It's a throwback. And
fit in like a Nicole Wallace dunk too, because apparently she has a show on MSNBC, and I'm kind of like, how?
Yeah. It's kind of like not saying CO's name. We'll just do it the first name, last letter only, Candace O, or... Yeah. We'll do it the other way, which is, you know, maybe it's that's too descriptive. We'll do the first initial last name of C. Owens. But, getting help by certain organizations, then come around and being douches. Super important. All right, here we go. All right. Oh, good transition. Segregated bathrooms, drinking fountains in schools were eliminated by Brown. Yes. But segregated bathrooms based on gender persist to this very day. And why? All right.
Yeah, for pretty good episode so far, right?
Yeah, you're killing it, dude. Yeah. All right. So, all right. Public bathrooms, circa the 1920s, were once reserved for males. This had the effect of enforcing gender roles. Women were effectively restricted from engaging in the public space because they didn't have access to bathrooms. That is true. If you cannot use a bathroom, you cannot be out and about. Out and about for our
stuff. For our non-Canadian listeners.
Non-Canadian listeners, yeah.
Which is currently 3% of our demographics, so we want to be inclusive.
You know, you can't leave anybody out. The original intent of codifying separate bathrooms in the building codes was largely centered around creating access, equality, and privacy for women. It was progress at the time. And that is a good point, that a lot of the laws that we have to continuously fight today were just reactionary based on the demands of the people at the time, without any actual forward thinking about what unintended consequences seem to happen.
Like, yeah. Obviously anybody that wants to go to the bathroom while they're in a public area should be allowed to. Like, it just seems really drunk and obvious, but it wasn't a thing in the 1920s.
Yeah, like the dump outside. So going outside, that's super.
Because you're poor.
Because I'm poor. Yeah. I mean, it's the same restrictions they do right now. Let's go on that about creating access, in which you corporations don't have to give you bathroom space unless you are a patron, right? Which precludes anybody that's homeless or without money, or they don't want to buy a $40 coffee at Starbucks. And then corporations are then effectively forced to either decide if they're going to either be a negative brand when it comes to bathroom sharing, or open to all. And you saw that with Starbucks yielding to public pressure, and they were going to let anybody go to the bathroom so no one got arrested again. And that's all something because of lawsuits. It has nothing to do really with, and lost profits. It has nothing really to do with caring about people. All right, so let's go back to this. Sorry. So how does this relate to Black Lives Matter movement? Yes. The modern concept of policing exists because of capitalism. Remember, all workforces employed by government entities that serve the ruling class and enforce the class divide are bastards. Yes, I don't remember what it was, but that is exactly it. It's right along the lines of ACAB, baby. But it's AWEBGETSTRCAETCDAB, baby. All right, BLM is trying to fix that. That's right. So it's a relatively small force that's been able to mobilize a large amount of people on the streets, and that's the important part about advocacy and just in being able to come together in one idea and have one leader and push this out. So that the fact that you're able to actually grow because you can have some sort of sustained movement is perfect.
All about civil rights at some point, like. Black Lives Matter is focused on policing right now, but it's not just about policing.
No, it's a hot button issue because it involves such egregious state violence. Bit of theory here, right? The violence here is so egregious and so visible that you can see it. It's not like visibility, or like poverty, which is blind to most people. It's not like lack of healthcare, which is distributed and blind to most people. This is videos of individuals being executed without trial and murdered in cold blood by people that are formed from the state or come from the state.
Yeah, it's a much more vulgar display. It's different than kids not getting proper nourishment at school, which doesn't get you kind of as vividly, and most individuals can just kind of hand wave it and rationalize it away as it being a long-term problem that has always been there, and so I don't really need to care about it.
And now he's at long-term, but you get used to it, and you get sort of stuck in that cycle. Desensitized, yeah. Which we hope doesn't happen to this movement, where it's constantly 24-hour news cycle, and you can already see it dropping off. I mean, Seattle's going to take back the chop.
Yep, nailed it.
Yep, got it. First time around. No editing required. Right, and that's because people are beginning to peter out. I mean, they blame it on violence, but really what it is people stopped caring. The number of people there is decreasing, and now the forces that are inside the shop are much smaller to handle. They're going to send in a much more trained and armed force to go in and remove them because the bodies just aren't there. I mean, it has nothing to do with Seattle's saying, which is because of gun violence. It has everything to do with, risk, losses, costs. Analysis there.
It's just kind of an atrophying of general interest and the concept waning over some 1 or 2 week period.
It's hard to have an occupying force last that long. I mean, the fact that it lasted this long is actually pretty impressive. All right, here we go. So today, gender segregated bathrooms are also a concert to capitalism. It sure is. They promote the construction of redundant facilities, which increase costs and profits for builders. That's weird. Why would builders want money? creating two gender-neutral bathrooms would create a situation in which there is a single provider, a physical bathroom, that provides equality to all participants. That is true. And we see this all the time. And I don't even know where to even start on this one, besides just rambling coherently about, small mom-and-pop shops spend a ton of money on floor space, and if they have to put another, 50 square feet up, 60 square feet for a bathroom, I mean, that's a ton of floor space they have to do. All right, let's keep moving. Yeah, here it is. So the idea behind creating additional bathrooms for trans people is idiotic. It's a capitalistic solution. It is not rooted in equality. Yeah, it is a nasty neoliberal idea that you're going to have a third bathroom for people who are, I guess, different from you. And so it creates another layer of separation.
Yeah, it's another layer of segregation. Kind of like compounding the problem by not addressing it in kind of a, I'm going to say from like an engineering perspective, it's kind of a clean solution of having like one bathroom that everybody uses. There's no dual maintenance. There's no extra water lines. There's no electrical excess. It's just an efficient implementation of resources to provide toilets. There doesn't need to be three toilets.
Yeah, and then you can move in even farther than that. Like, are you going to start putting it for different people of, like, you know, different types of customers, right? Can you start segregating to the, which they already do, the high-paying, low-paying customers, the front and back? Yeah, so this is really interesting because if we start to look at what the international building codes say, and I won't bore everybody with it, but basically, you know, unisex toilets are allowed in all the building codes. So International Building Code 2902.2.1, if you guys want to read that, International Building Code 2902.2, all have ideas like separate facilities shall not be required for dwelling units and sleeping units. Separate facilities are not required in structures or tenant spaces with a total occupant load, including both employees and customers 15 or less. And separate facilities should not be required in mercantile occupancies in which the maximum occupant load is 50 or less. So the real question is whether or not unisex toilets are allowed as part of the building code. And at this point, it seems like unisex are allowed. And you just have to have multiple facilities if you have a lot of people in your building. And I think that makes sense because in general, you don't want weights and you don't want overuse of a single facility.
Yeah. So
am I getting that right?
I think so. I think there's a lot of like technical nuance that is just kind of deferred through time associated with IBC language, which is International Building Code, where each city kind of just blanket adopts some building code. Every construction company that does commercial buildings says, oh, well, we're going to do the number 8, which is a 2,000 square foot commercial, blah, 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 with bathrooms for X number of people. And they just build it. And there's not a lot of thought put into what does the language actually mean? Could we be more efficient? Like, let's think about it from like a human rights perspective. No, it's just we're throwing up a commercial building because some dude's paying us and we're going to take the money.
Yep. And that's it. I mean, they're obviously going to exploit what they can. So you see exploitation in multiple ways. High rent. You're seeing it in greed, or like, I guess, construction cost itself. You're seeing it if they are converting from one style of business to another. So there's money to be made by every builder and capitalist here. And they're not going to let anything slip aside. So
it's largely just an unanswered question as to whether do truly gender-neutral bathrooms meet building code. My argument would be yes, but I don't know that anybody at a kind of a legal stature level of like a city council has ever gone to bat and said, yeah, it's fine, okay, and then withstood kind of the successive lawsuit of somebody complaining about it, because that's the most American thing possible to do is complain about something that doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it waste everything through.
Toilet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so the listeners know, one of the best strategies is the basically sue and wait strategy, which is you can drain another person's ability to do anything just by a lawsuit. And they have to have legal counsel to fight it, legal counsel to go through all the different laws. I mean, there's a lot here to appeal if they lose. So you can actually win effectively just by having more money than them and waiting them out legally. Now, in the end, 5, 7, 10 years, if you are, let's say, the one that's being sued and you prevail, you get paid for all the stuff that you've lost. But in the meantime, you've lost work and you've lost all the time at your job, all the customers you have. You can have all types of things happen along the way. So one of the easiest things for people with big bankrolls are is to sue. All right, so here we go. Go back to this idea of crazy lawsuit. Maybe someone here listening should sue for unisex bathrooms. Creating gender facilities costs more and therefore leads to more profits for the builders. There might be some arguments that this increase leads to more work for the workers doing plumbing, electrical, etc. So we're talking about class solidarity here. But in my view, it could be used to build other things. I mean, this is just a redundant
thing. Yeah, so I was a little unsure about that kind of paragraph, but I got to thinking about how, yes, there's less work in the immediate job, but there's such a shortage of plumbing and electrical and HVAC and just the general trades in general that it's not like there's an employee shortage on these tasks. So there are slots for workers. We're not taking away potential employment, potential earnings. We're making infrastructure spending more efficient, which should collectively benefit everybody, was, I think, my general conclusion. But it, I think it does need to be mentioned that it might result in less work, depending on kind of the surrounding ecosystem associated with this. But at same time, kind of like, who gives a shit?
So what do we really want here? In the end, we want, you know, it seems like we're saying we want everybody equal, but in the end, we don't, right? We want equality for everybody. We want equality so that any individual could use the bathroom without anybody questioning whether or not they belong in
there. Yeah.
And that doesn't just mean...
we want anybody to be able to go...
to the bathroom. That's it. That's our slogan.
After they've eaten Chipotle.
Yes, if you Chipotle, and you have to go throw the burrito from your mouth into the toilet immediately. It should be anybody. I mean, anybody should go to the bathroom. There shouldn't be selective, right? And the other part is that we also have gender stereotypes when it comes to like other resources, things like changing stations, right? They're only sometimes if they have them in women's bathrooms or having stalls and urinals, which the urinals are for efficiency, but also, you know, it's only limited to one or the other. So, I mean, it's kind of a weird scenario where these things exist for the building or product, you know, just to build. Yeah, and back to the idea that this hurts workers. Like, if you have talked to anybody in trades or builds, you'll know that there is a shortage of people, especially those that have went through the union camps, the actual union trade schools. And yeah, there's people that are at the halls, but in general, you know, it's really tough to find labor right now. In particular, we have a lot of rebuilding that's happening in the South, a lot of growth in certain hot areas. And there's just not a lot of people coming out of schools looking to do manual labor, I guess is what the negativity is to it. We talk all day about the college versus work, you know, argument that we constantly have, but there just seems to be a shortage constantly of workers. And so freeing up anything small like this, being able to bang out plumbing in a shopping area faster would be a lot better for society in general.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of other kind of subtle, obvious benefits to having gender-neutral bathrooms that just kind of take place in your everyday life. You know, there's a situation where your kid went to Chipotle and needs to use the bathroom immediately, and you're like, okay, well, I got to go in and supervise. So which bathroom do you go in? Do you go in your gender or do you go in your kid's gender? And you, like, what do? It's a gender-neutral bathroom. Who cares? You just walk in. Kind of the same thing, but kind of the opposite problem where instead of helping a kid, you're helping the elderly. There's some additional contexts, like for schools where teachers of young kids want to, you know, supervise what's going on in the bathrooms. The teacher will be of one gender and, you know, have the kids go into a room that they, you know, can't go into. Gender neutral, that's not really a problem. There's also this security concept was touched on a little bit, but there's this notion of like if everybody poops together, like, there's a safety issue. And at a fundamental level, that's not really true, because having more people kind of observe the general area kind of increases security. But also, gender-neutral bathrooms typically have, like, actual doors that lock, not like, here's a flimsy piece of sheet metal that's already bent that doesn't lock. And then, at the end of the day, segregated gender bathrooms are probably unconstitutional based on the 1954 ruling in Brown versus Board of Education. So, like, that's another reason why we probably shouldn't have gender segregated bathrooms, is because it's unequal, kind of by definition.
Yeah, good point. It sure is. You bring up a lot of weird nuances, and I think we've all seen lines in which the women's bathroom was much longer than men's, especially at sports games and concerts and things in which you have high volume. We're seeing things like you're saying, like when people are getting dressed. I mean, luckily there's a family restroom in some of the big areas, bigger malls. You can take your family and kids and go in there together and all interact. So you're not separating, you know, the parents from the kids, like you were saying earlier, but also that. But if you're in, you know, a heterosexual marriage and you have a man and a wife and kids, then they have to separate and go to different bathrooms as this. So having one, you know, family restroom or having unisex bathrooms are great. Speaking from experience here.
And unisex is definitely the better messaging or branding.
Yeah. Unisex. Yeah, for sure. I mean, unisex is already in some areas, yep. Right? They just scrape the male and female off the doors and just put unisex up, or just a picture of everybody, right? Yep. And then the other thing that comes along too is you also end up with the ability of ACA stuff coming in, right? So you end up with the accessibility when it comes to, you know, handicap accessibility all across the board. So again, we're talking about things like just like baby changers or even rail systems that may not be in some areas, or multiple stalls and all the stalls can have rails. Instead of having urinals and then a stall within a building and taking up more space, we can actually end up having everything we need at one shot for all customers and all people. And it's a weird thing to be arguing that we're going to be benefiting the business owner, but in the end, we're trying to benefit the worker who has to spend all their time shopping as is, or going out and about as is, and we don't want anybody to be discriminated, regardless of what makes the what it is that they discriminate against.
And it's an engineering efficiency.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Who wants to waste resources?
If you want to just make an absolutely sterile economic, like, people-less utilitarian argument, it literally costs less money to do unisex bathrooms.
Yeah, 100%. So utilitarian, which is just like you said, like the nastiest engineering point of view. It really is. I mean, you're going to line up and say, would you want to spend $1,000, $2,000? I'm spending $1,000. I mean, it's a pretty simple return on investment, ROI. You want to talk about sterile engineering discussion?
We're going to use the economics tag.
Okay. Sounds good to me. So what complicates all of this and what makes this tough is that, starting from the top down, we have the International Building Code, and then we have a bunch of muddled state and city codes and nobody leading anywhere. And so you'll see this in all bureaucracies, and you'll see this everywhere in the world, in which there is no leader because everybody defers to the council, right? Your city council. There's nobody championing this. There's no one to take responsibility because I just say, oh, we're going to vote on it. And what happens is people vote conservatively, because they're the ones held accountable, and that is in every single bureaucracy. So in the end, you just say it's much easier for us to have a male and female bathroom, and now a trans bathroom, because we already have two, we might as well have three, and there's nothing that changes. And so with that, you have, you know, multiple municipalities with generic building code language that requires compliance with the IBC, and that is a standard in almost all of them. And now you may see things like, oh, we have the International Building Code versus the U.S. code, depending on if you're in the rural or in cities. And this also determines how your local municipality interprets the IPC. And this is, again, has to go with separate bathrooms or override existing. And this has to do with that the building inspector, what they decide at that point in time. And if override doesn't exist, figure out the city or council mayor would support gender-neutral bathrooms. This is actually a call of action here. If you feel strongly or not even strongly at all, if you just support workers in general, this is the important part. So on this podcast, because we taught you a little bit today, I hope, and we've muddled a little bit through this, the hard part right now is finding champions who want to look through the building code, see if it requires IBC or what it requires, and then begin to reach out and write basic simple letters to city council or your building inspector or your permits department and just start asking questions about whether or not gender-neutral bathrooms or unisex bathrooms are allowed under code. And then if not, how are you going to change that? And that is basically bothering the mayor and city council until they call you a pest and they write a small little change that basically overrides the existing law and makes unisex bathrooms or gender-neutral bathrooms legal.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.